Hello and welcome to the podcast Lotus Eaters, episode number 643. And I'm your host, Harry, joined today by returning guests, Dan and Stan from Voice of Wales. How are you two folks doing today?
Very well.
Very well, thank you.
Glad to hear it. And I think we've got the camera set up so that they are not being dwarfed by me, or at least not as much as they are actually dwarfed by me in real life. And today we're going to be discussing the colonisation of the English countryside. We're going to also talk about how Wales handles illegal migrants. I would like to think that's going to be a positive one, but it probably won't be, will it? I don't imagine Wales has got some kind of iron-fisted, get them out idea of how to deal with illegal migrants. Of course not. And then we're also going to talk about anti-racist voodoo. Before we get into the news, is there anything you'd like to, any announcements that you guys have about your show that you'd like to let the audience know?
Just still plugging along. Tuesdays and Thursdays, voiceofwales.com is the website. On Getter, at Voice of Wales Official. And on Twitter as well, you've got Stan Voice of Wales streaming on all of them. We're on Facebook, but we don't plug it too much because we're only on it for about 3 weeks at a time, and then we get kicked off. So it's just...
You get zucked.
Yes.
Yeah. Fair play. All right, well, check them out if you can go on Getter and Twitter and find them on there. Without any further ado, let's get into the news. So, the countryside in England is being colonised. This is something that is clear. The whole country is basically being colonised, but the countryside in particular, because there have been people doing these write-ups about how apparently, and this may be a surprise to you because I don't remember any signs up saying no blacks, no Irish, no sheepdogs or anything, but apparently the countryside is just an incredibly aggressive and hostile place for anybody who's not of direct British descent in this country. Have you guys experienced this?
No.
No, I haven't either, but apparently this is just an undiagnosed pandemic that is going on in the country. And somebody felt the need to write a massive long article talking about the... If you wouldn't mind just moving your microphone down, there we go. Somebody wrote a massive long article complaining about it, with the ultimate solution, of course, being we need more money. That's always the solution to absolutely everything. So let's take a look at that in a moment. We do first have some new content, some new work that we've put up on the website. Josh did this recent premium video on his contemplation series on the Mouse Utopia experiment, which is something that I have always heard about and always sounds a bit scary, to be honest. Whenever I hear people talk about something called the Mouse Utopia experiment, and they talk about it in these negative terms about how horrible it was, it makes me think something bad probably went down there. Mm. So if you've never heard of it, or if you want to explore more of it, or if you just want some refresher and information, you can find that on the website. We offer memberships on the website for as little as £5 a month, and that gives you access to all of the work that we do on there. So please consider signing up, because we do put a lot of work into everything we do. So anyway, this is what got a lot of people in a bit of a huff last week, was this tweet from a Natalie Morris writing for a website called The Lead, or which I'd never heard of before, with this lovely image of these people just walking around the British countryside, giving little love hearts. That woman on the right looking a little bit zonked out. I'm not going to lie. She's got a bit of the SSRI stare, but that's neither here nor there. And she wrote about rural racism, the colonial legacies that mar the British countryside, and the groups working to tackle hate and hostility. And this got a lot of people a bit worried, a bit concerned, a bit confused as to what this rural racism is. Perhaps the sheep are bleating slurs in their direction.
See, if that was written as part of a grant application to the Welsh Government, she'd get millions.
Oh, of course she would. Of course you would. And to be fair...
For no scientific reason, other than the fact that she'd get millions.
Yeah, for all we know, they might be doing this as we speak. This might be part of an organised campaign. I mean, you don't really need to do much of a campaign. You just need to write a letter to Mark Drayford saying, I'm black, can I have some money, please? Yeah. And he goes, all right, lad, here's a 20 for you. It's like when you go around your grands when you're a kid and she tells, don't tell your mum about this, and she slips you a tenner or something.
That's
the Welsh Government for anybody who isn't Welsh.
Absolutely.
Absolutely correct.
So I thought it'd be fun to take a look through this article and see what it is that they've been saying, because this is just funny in and of itself, some of the absolute nonsense claims that are made in here, but also is kind of a bit sad. It's a bit of a sad sign of where the countryside is going. Not necessarily that there are now brown people wandering around it, oh, God forbid. Yeah. More just the terms that are being spoken about and the fact that it's basically being treated like the English, by having a countryside, and the Welsh and the Scottish as well, by having a countryside that they have looked after for 1,000 years, just are therefore claiming it for themselves, keeping it from everybody's. Yeah. Everybody else just has a right to everything, and they are putting up actual markers basically denoting that they own it now. So this article is black and brown hikers are taking back Britain's countryside. Taking back. Do you remember when they had it in the first place?
It must have been 1,000 years ago, I'd imagine. Then,
probably even further back than that. Yeah,
maybe when they were indigenous.
Prior to the...
Well, I've seen no cotton fields in the Brecon Beacons.
Neither have I, but maybe we just weren't looking hard enough. So let's take a look through. So they say hobbies like hill walking, wild swimming, too often seen as the preserve of white people. Okay. All right, but a new generation is challenging the prejudices that stop diverse communities enjoying the great outdoors. Okay, and John had a great response to this on his tweets, but I'll just repeat it here, which is just okay. That was always allowed.
Yeah,
you were never not allowed to come into the countryside over here. This has never been, you know, Confederate. Southern states of the US where people weren't allowed to. This was never Jim Crow era laws or anything. Yeah. We've always just been like, look at how pretty our countryside is. If you want to go for a walk in it, go for a walk in it. But they seem to have a lot of problems with that, and they seem to have a lot to say about it. So they say, Sidra, a 20-year-old apprentice from Coventry, is a member of the walking group Muslim Hikers. To mark Ramadan this year, this group teamed up with Wiggle and Adidas Terex to create a range of prayer mats designed specifically for outside use. And that's how you know. That's how you know that you're on the side of the oppressed underclasses, when you're being funded by Adidas.
Yes.
When you're getting money from massive shoe companies, that's how you know that I'm the little guy.
Yeah.
Nobody's on my side.
Specially designed prayer mats, you know. Are they going to have the three stripes on them as well? You know, the Adidas
maybe
stripes?
Who knows? They want to get the branding in there, you know. When you're praying to Allah, you want to make sure that you've got good backing behind you.
It'll be a prayer mat with a compass in, I take it.
Presumably. And they say here, well, you don't need the compass, actually, because what the next sentence is, next part of the sentence is what concerns me about this, because they say they have installed signs pointing to Mecca along popular hiking routes in the Peak District. Can you believe that?
That's unbelievable.
Can you actually believe that? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, because what's happening there, that is why I've called this segment countryside colonization, because those are actual colonial tactics.
Yeah.
When you would go into a different country and decide this is ours now, one of the first things that you do is you put up signage that lets everybody know that this is your country now.
Yeah.
So we are a Christian country, historically, unless you go all the way back to Anglo-Saxon pagan times, and even then we became Christians partway through that anyway. This is a Christian country. We should not have Muslim signs pointing to Mecca in the countryside.
No.
But this is, again, you're right, it is colonization, and we don't, you know, we don't need it. I always remember from doing my Duke of Edinburgh's award as a cadet, take nothing out of the countryside except memories, leave nothing in the countryside except footprints. Mm. You don't need anything else. You, that's it. So compasses, signs to Mecca, or anything else is not correct. It's not right.
No, it's certainly not right. And once again, this is just, to me, the same as when you look at Whitechapel and you see images where they've got the train stations and you've got the one sign in English, the one sign in some Arabic language, etc. The only sign for this is that we're in charge now.
Yes.
That's how I see it. And it should not be going on. I would take them down personally, but I'm not suggesting anybody do anything like that without, of course, legal permission to do so. And they say here, they carry on saying, considering that these people were subject to a torrent of racist online abuse for posting about a Christmas Day hike in 2021, Sidra says this new collaboration means the world for her. I would imagine there's probably some context being left out there.
Yes.
And that kind of torrent of racist abuse is probably along the lines of us criticising this article right now. We're being evil by doing this. I hope you understand that.
Are they now going to close down the little country pubs on the hikes, on the walks, because that might offend people? Or the bacon butty wagons that crop up on in Brecon in particular, where the SAS do the training? There's a bacon butty...
Bacon, that's pretty haram.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Where does this go?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, from where I would see it, I would imagine that as long as it cements in this domination of the native population of these countries, that's as far as they go. Anything that furthers them being in charge or being put in positions of hierarchy above us, That's where it's going to go. And the only thing that will push back is other people with money and influence being able to push back against it, or just the people, you know, organising, protesting against it as well. But they say, they carry on and say, just having these signs pointing towards Mecca might seem like a small thing, but it's a really thoughtful idea. Yeah, for the, I mean, according to this very article, according for the five people who go around there, it's not a necessary thing. I've already seen clips and photos and images of people having Muslim prayers in Christian churches.
Oh, yeah.
And we already have mosques popping up all around the country where there weren't before. You can go to somewhere like Preston and there's a mosque on every corner. Mm-hmm. Why do you also need to go into churches? And why are the churches and why are the priests allowing this?
I think that's
because they're apostate.
It's an insult, isn't it? Because there's, for me, it's happening in Swansea and a church close to my house. It was one that my father's nana used to go to. She used to play the organ in church. That has now become a mosque. And, you know, that would have upset my whole family, you know, and that is at the end of a school road, and that mosque is now openly promoting itself to the schools, you know,
of course.
Come in to and celebrate Eid with us. There was nothing for Easter, by the way, but all the local schools go to the mosque.
Yeah, and of course we had South Wales Police doing a almost a dance tribute to Eid with the Chief Constable. And
sorry, really?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I didn't see. I must have missed this.
We'll send it to. So you had one officer saying, "I'm not eating to support my friends for Eid."
It's true. All right.
Yeah. And the Chief Constable happy Eid and all. Well, actually, it's Mubarak.
Eid Mubarak.
Give it the full title. And he had his chocolate medals on. I say chocolate medals because he's never served in the armed forces.
Oh, right.
So he was wearing the Queen's Silver Jubilee Medal, the Queen's Gold Jubilee Medal.
Participation medal.
And a long service medal for being a civil servant. Oh,
brilliant.
Very highly decorated.
Highly decorated. Shiny.
Yeah. It's just an insult, isn't it?
It's
just meant to humiliate us. And they have some research to back all of this up as well, to prove that we definitely need this. We need all of these groups to be able to get people to go into the countryside, because otherwise they just won't, because there is just racism just in the hills.
But Harry, look, you know, the Cubs, Guides, Scouts, Boys Brigade, the Sea Cadets, the Sea Scouts, the Air Cadets, the Army Cadets, all take in, guess what? Different minorities. Mm. They go and invade the countryside by doing the Duke of Edinburgh's award. So this nonsense that these people try and push is completely a nonsense. And
but there's evidence.
Once you've got the taste for the countryside, you go back to it and back to it and back to it. It drives you there.
Mm.
But in order for that to happen, you've got to get off your ass and stop criticising on a keyboard, saying, oh, I'm black and I'm oppressed and I'm talking about something that happened to my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, possibly, and I'm still oppressed today. Just grow up, sod off if you don't like this country.
But there is evidence, though. There is evidence, and that is that only 1% of visitors to UK national parks are from black, Asian or minority ethnic backgrounds, according to Campaign to Protect Rural England. And I ask of this, how is this anybody else's fault but their own?
Yeah, yeah.
If they just and it's nobody's fault even. If they just don't want to go, okay, that's their own choice. But they say, this woman writing this article has even more evidence, which is in her gut, she just feels that it's racist. Where she says, among black and ethnic minority communities, there is a sense that outdoor pursuits are not for us. Okay? And limiting narratives that black people don't go walking, that open water swimming is for white women, oops, and that minority groups are only comfortable in cities. And those are perpetuated narratives, apparently. I mean, once again, if this is the case, I don't see the evidence of it.
No.
And if it is just the case that these communities don't do those things very often, that's nobody's choice but their own. Very, very strange. But of course, if there is any disparity, this is the world that we live in. If there are any disparities between anything, normal behaviours or anything that anybody does, then it must be down to the town to racism.
Do they want some form of Basil Fawlty at the end of a street that's full of ethnic toys? Get on the bus! Get on! No! Get on the and whipping them onto the bus to get them into the countryside.
It might have to come to that.
What it'll come to probably is free transport for people to go to the countryside. And when I say people, obviously oppressed people. Like, I'd love to know that 1%. How long has that 1% taken over and where from? You know, yeah. Was it Pembrey Country Park for one day?
I used to be a member of the CPRE and CPRW. Oh, yeah. So Council for the Protection of Rural England, Council for the Protection of Rural Wales. We dealt exclusively with buildings infringing on in the countryside. Colourful buildings. So you might get a building that they want an orange building in the middle of the countryside. No, stop that. Walls.
That
dry
would be
walls.
Hideous.
Yeah, dry walls. Things that, you know, that didn't impact on the countryside. Why are they now doing surveys on minorities?
Because they're impacting the countryside, apparently.
They're not, are they?
No. Well, one of the things that might come up in a moment is some of them might be in a way that's negative if this report is to be anything to go by. They do say before a 2011 report from the University of Leicester. So this one report is what we're going off. Said that there are frequent and alarming forms of racism that affect ethnic minorities in the countryside, and the university has now commissioned a fresh 2-year study to develop an evidence base which reveals the way in which rural racism is expressed and experienced, which is due to begin in October. I will not trust a single thing that comes from this report. There is so much research.
Is it Harriet Watt that's the Agricultural College?
I don't know.
I think it is. It should be them that do this survey.
Oh, perhaps
not Birmingham,
Leicester.
Or Leicester.
Whatever comes from it at the end of the day, anyway, is going to be politically motivated.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, and they're just going to have it politically motivated by political actors dressed up as scientists, so that at the end of it, they can say, "See, we have scientific evidence," and that's all it is. But then you get this kind of a self report in this next bit here, where it says Nigerian-born Enoch Adeyemi, I don't know how to pronounce that, co-founder of Black Scottish Adventurers, recently shared his experiences of hiking with a large group of black men, revealing they are constantly subject to spurious complaints about littering, condescension, and demands to stop playing music. He says, "Why should I turn off my music?" So you are playing music,
yeah.
Probably loudly, when somebody just wants to go for a nice walk around the countryside and listen to the birds singing and enjoy the beautiful peace of the countryside.
That is one, again, with CPRE, this is one of the founding rules, really, of all national parks. It's the quiet contemplation of the area that you're in.
That's absolutely what it should be about.
That's why speedboats can't go over, is it 5 miles an hour in the Lake District, which you're going to be going to.
I mean, certainly good.
And there's no power boats. There's no. What do they call them? Those that you stand
Loud
up
things.
Skis.
Right. Yeah.
There's none of that. It's got to be, you know, sailing. Got to be, you know, canoeing. Quiet stuff.
Good. You want it to be peaceful.
Correct.
That's the point
That's
of going
go
to the countryside.
There.
If you want to experience noise, hustle and bustle, constant music playing everywhere, you go into
Brixton.
You go into an area of a major city that has a large foreign population, and you'll get all of this experience. Mm. That's not what I go to the countryside
Correct.
For. And if they are going to bring that experience over into the countryside, it's no wonder that people have said to them, "Could you please turn that music off, or to at least turn it down?" And these people are apparently hearing that and going, "Oh, so you're just racist then?
Yeah, is it because I is black?
Yeah, is it because I is black, mate? No, it's because you're blasting music and I'm trying to go for a walk."
The fact
that they've admitted, "Oh, well, we are playing music," it makes me also think, probably are littering aren't you?
Yeah.
You probably are.
We went on a walk. We did back last summer, 90 miles, 3 days, just a little fundraising walk over the Bracken Beacons. And one of the things I commented on is when you walk for, you know, a day into the hills, the silence is deafening. You know, that pressure on your ears from hearing nothing whatsoever, it was an experience I've never had. So if there was someone there with a nice, you know, if they're leaving litter and having music loud as well, no matter who they are, I'd probably say, "Would you mind turning that down a little bit?" You know, it doesn't matter what colour they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's just respectful thing to do when you're in these sorts of places.
I mean, the other week, I went to Cirencester down the road. Lovely little town, gorgeous place. And I went around for a walk around the Abbey grounds because they've got a big, beautiful church there with Abbey grounds behind it. And there was a group of white English teenagers sitting around in the field blasting music in an inappropriate volume. didn't have to matter that they were white or whatever colour they were. It was annoying.
And they were
in church abbey grounds that everybody was enjoying for the peace, quiet of it, for being able to just have a nice time in the park with their friends. Don't blast your music in public. That's just rude.
And
that's one of the things. This is perhaps this is just English, Welsh, British standards that we just, if you go into the countryside, be considerate to others.
Consideration.
If these are racist standards, I'm sorry to say, I will be upholding them.
We've got to embrace these new racist standards because everything's racist, apparently. You know?
Well, if it comes from a British background, then absolutely. Yeah. British European background, apparently that just means it's racist.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, this is where this sort of thing is going. I think the only solution they're going to have here is to remove the countryside.
which the Welsh government are doing quite well.
Which they are doing,
we've got to pave over the countryside and build suburbs and build new parts of cities. Greater Manchester needs to become greater Manchester. London needs to take over the entire south coast of the country. God, it sounds like a living hell. But thankfully, they do have a woman called Beth Collier, who is a psychotherapist, an ethnographer, and a founder of the nature-based community group Wild in the City, to be able to put some philosophic psychobabble on top of all of this rubbish so that you can read this and think to yourself, that's right, I'm smarter for reading this. You're not. I'm sorry, I'm putting you through this. I'm actively draining brain cells and IQ points from the two of you reading through some of this. But she says, in a lot of the philosophy of the early environmental movements, there was a parallel between the idea of pristine landscapes and the ideas of pristine races, which probably just means the English liked wandering around the English countryside and going, isn't it nice that we're English and keep such a nice countryside?
Yeah.
This is racism.
Do you know what? She actually needs to read about the mass trespass, because white working class were actually barred from the countryside.
Oh, yeah, this is true.
And it was the mass trespass on Kinder Scout. And that's what opened the countryside up. And that's not many years ago. That's about 100-odd years ago. That's not many years ago. So all this is just crap.
Yeah, it's all crap. I mean, at the end of the day, when you start doing stuff like that, it just becomes impractical to be able to enforce such nonsensical rules like, sorry, you can't go to the countryside. Because everybody will just go, well, I'll go anyway.
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do? You're going to arrest literally everybody who goes into the countryside.
I've just been sent a link, actually, and it's Wales Online. They've had to close a nice tourist walking area around a dam and a nice big lake, very scenic and popular route, because of dog mess. So rather than police that, they've just closed it off. So there's no public access anymore. So this is what I mean when you just get rid of the countryside. No more access for the public.
Oh, brilliant. Well, that's what we've got to look forward to, with people blasting music and leaving litter all over the place.
Yeah, so the potential there is to mass trespass without animals, because they can't lock you all up, and it's not right that people should be barred from the countryside, whether you're black, white, or sky blue, pink with yellow dots on. But the ethnic minorities on this report, it seems to me, have such a big chip on the shoulder. They need to knock that off, get off their arse, get on a bus, and go to the countryside themselves.
If that's what they desperately want to do in the first place.
Or write to Adidas and say, can you sponsor us?
Can you get me a ticket for the bus?
Can you get me a ticket for the bus, and can I have some new shoes, please?
Yeah.
And they'd probably say, yeah, of course. Well, I mean, if they say no, you just go, I'm going to get a lawyer involved. You're obviously racially discriminating me.
Oh, don't do that, we'll send you two pairs.
And of course, the answer, as I mentioned, is always, I'll go through the answers near the bottom here. They say there are organisations that are pushing for change. They want to get more people of minority backgrounds into the countryside. And alongside Wild in the City, Muslim Hikers, there's also Black Girls Hike, Flock Together, Peaks of Colour, and they don't say it here, but the rather hilariously named We Go Outside Too, which sounds like a South Park joke. Yeah. To name just a few of the groups involved, focused on improving access, representation, and funding for black people and ethnic minorities in outdoor spaces, activities, and sports. Middle-aged white women in their white men in their ivory towers, who are in charge of budgets and funding for these organizations, need to listen and act on what we have been telling them about our communities and the lack of inclusion that we've seen in these spaces. So here it comes. The senior managements of teams at NGOs and organizations responsible for creating inclusive outdoor spaces need to look around them. They need to ask themselves if their senior and board level teams accurately represent a diverse community. 99% of them don't. So you need to change it, which means you need to give me and my buddies all the jobs and all the money.
Yeah,
That's what it always always comes down to. It's just give me more.
Yes.
Since the boom of BLM, burn, loot, and murder.
Mm-hmm. We'll be getting into a bit of that later on in my third segment as well. This is just what it always comes down to. It comes down to we're not getting the exact same statistical results as everybody else, so give us more.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was interesting that after this came out, and obviously all of the problems that's ever faced humanity, even if you want to call I don't fancy going for a walk today a big problem, it all comes down to white people. And white people and European people, British people, if you have any kind of identity, if you recognize that, hold up, everybody else in the world seems to be becoming increasingly hostile to my very existence, this just immediately associates you with Nazis, with the KKK, all of these hateful groups. And I saw this clip come up that Myth-Informed Mike shared, which was rather shocking. It's a clip that's about 2 years old, but it really does kind of sum up this attitude that we're experiencing at the moment. If you want to play this for us, John.
If you're watching to the end of this, I don't think you identify as white. You're not a neo-Nazi or you're not a KKK member unless you're hate watching this. And as I've said, go fuck yourself. But if you're not like that,
cheers, lad,
then you know you're not sitting around talking about white pride and preserving the white race and our white women and we must keep reproducing and produce white children. You're probably not like that. If you're a decent person, then it should be quite easy to put the whiteness down. So I encourage you to renounce your whiteness and join the human race.
What?
I know. Absolutely ridiculous. It's just very hateful, as far as I can tell. Being somebody that I look in the mirror and I go, I'm pretty pale today. Yeah. I can stand out in the sun for who knows how long and it won't change. I hear that and I think, oh, you just hate me.
Yeah.
You hate me and you want me gone. Okay, that's interesting. It even came from a video. People have just rediscovered this. It came from a video that nobody had ever heard of before. But it's just so emblematic. If you go to the next link, John, the video is just called Renounce Your Whiteness.
Yeah.
No, how about that? And just to end off this segment, just one last thing. When I mentioned earlier that the science is all politically motivated, it's all political actors, for anybody who may have doubted me on the accuracy of that statement, I saw this tweet going around a few days ago from a wonderful wonderful Twitter account called Data Hazard, which you should all follow. He posts some very, very interesting stats and figures, where he just points out that in America, the Biden administration is going to just be outlawing what's referred to here as imbalanced data sets and any kind of research that comes to discriminatory outcomes. So if you do research on particular topics where you find that there may be a disparity at the end of it that doesn't paint particular communities in a good light, you are literally going to be violating federal law in the US.
So even if it's factual.
Especially if it's factual.
I've actually got some information for you, Harry.
Oh yeah, carry on.
That already happens in Wales.
I'm not surprised.
You cannot find out how many refugees we have in Wales.
Yeah, we'll be going on to that.
But we will be going on to that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The 1984 dystopia is...
Whenever these things come out, they're never... This isn't just the start of it. It's never just the start of it. It's always just... We're just putting into words what we've already been doing. Mm. If you had already been doing this, you may not have been violating federal law, but you can guarantee if it had been part of a university, then all of the students would have immediately been mobilised against you by an organisation like BLM or some such. So... Yeah, just remember to go for a walk in your local countryside park today, please. And respect it. Be respectful. Don't litter. Don't blast music. Just go for a walk. Enjoy the peace and quiet. If you do want to listen to music, put some bloody earphones in.
Excellent.
There we go. Let's go on to your segment. So let's find out how Wales handles illegal migrants.
Yeah, well, I think it's quite interesting as well, because obviously Wales is full of countryside, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it does kind of follow on nicely.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, and every time, you know, anytime I get speaking to a visitor in Wales, wherever they're from, the first thing I recommend is to, go to the Gower, you know, go to Brecon, you know, go and explore.
I've been to Snowdonia, lovely part of the country.
Yeah, it's, you know, it really is, and it's really not that far away neither, and it's the first thing I recommend, so... You know, that doesn't sound very racist, but this segment...
That's what you think.
Yeah, apparently, it's all upside down now, though, isn't it? It's what we think is the opposite, you know, again, like you say, Orwell again. But England and Wales, you know, it's handled completely different, isn't it, when it comes to the illegal immigration. I know England, it's dealt with by Circle, who are still government-funded. They get the money and then they're managing the hotels that the illegal immigrants are going into. In Wales, it's different. We've got Clear Springs Ready Home Limited and SBHL, which is Stay Belvedere Hotels Limited, something like that. And the Welsh government want to do it completely different. They want to avoid hotels altogether. So they kind of do it on a reverse. They settle them first and then process them. Because when they come into Wales, it's priority housing. They get put straight to the top of the housing list and they're put into houses. And it's not just an area. It's dotted all around the country, basically. We've been investigating it in Swansea and South Wales, because it's easier to travel, and having a look at the companies dealing with it, how it works, and what their sort of system, I suppose, is. And what they're doing is they're buying properties off private landlords, Airbnbs, things like that, and settlement in the communities. Now, a lot of people that we've spoken to, when we say that to people in Wales, they're like, well, isn't that better? Because if you've got a hotel, they're all in one pressure cooker, so to say, and you know any eruptions is going to happen, there's a lot more of them, it could be a lot worse. But the problem that we always see, and I only came to this because some of the links and the articles we're going to go through are literally 5 minutes walk from my house where these men are living. So that's what our problem's always been.
And these are illegal migrants coming into the country through who knows what route. They're just immediately put to the top of a priority list that says you get a house in some community who have no say over the matter.
Yeah,
there seems to be two sets. So you've got the Ukrainian refugees.
All right.
And they're put into hotels, or they're put into accommodation that is linked.
There's a reason they're put in hotels.
So the actual refugees escaping a war, they get put in the hotels.
Yeah.
And the migrants get put in houses.
Yeah. Except for now, the houses are all gone. So we had a list when Clear Springs first announced what they were doing. Well, not first announced, but we first found out what they were doing. They had a list of all the assets they own through Companies House. That's hidden now, and I wish we'd saved it. But it was 1,000 addresses just in Swansea, which is a lot. And it's like five in this area, five in that area, five in that area, and it's all across Swansea. Now, Wales is a nation of sanctuary. So Mark Drakeford self-declared Wales a nation of sanctuary, where it doesn't matter who you are, why you come in, or where from. You're welcome.
Except if you're white, homeless. And then you can sleep on a bench.
Well, that was the thing I was about to ask. The native Welsh people who are homeless, I assume they're not getting priority housing.
No. So the country aspires to be a nation of sanctuary because they have not got the legal capacity to be a nation of sanctuary. Let's put that straight.
Yeah, it's not a devolved.
No. And secondly, what it does is it has repercussions. So you fill up the private housing stock, which means people on waiting lists can't get a house because there's no housing stock there, and they've been rented out for 5 years, 7 years, whatever, to the Home Office. So you're immediately stopping people who have paid into this country all their lives, who want a house but they can't get one because there's no housing available. They're now filling up the Airbnbs. That also has a knock-on effect because, of course, the people that they're generally putting in there don't drink, don't spend money in the local community, and so places like Tenby, Swansea, Cardiff, of course, and the tourists can't get housing or can't
Tenby, because I've been to Tenby a number of times. It's a gorgeous part of Wales. I love Tenby.
It is, and so they've had 2 years or 3 years of closed down because of COVID. There's lots of people on the brink, on the edge now. And of course, the people that are trying to, the properties that are being filled up, tourists can't get because they're filled.
Once again, having been to Tenby quite a few times, it seems like the sort of small town where the economy there, the local economy, will be mainly fueled by tourism.
Oh, without a doubt.
Because everything around there is a lovely little beachside town. They've got that, I forget what it's called, they've got the little castle mount on top of next to just going out of the coastline that you can get to from the beach. A beautiful, beautiful place. And if I were to try and sign up to like go to a hotel there or something tomorrow, and then found out that it was full of migrants, I'd be furious.
Yeah. Well, that's where we first started really recording on the migrant situation. It was in a place called Penali, which is in Tenby. And it was a little town of 800 people. We're having 250 male migrants dumped in an army barracks. And obviously the locals weren't happy.
Because that won't have any effect on the local culture or anything.
Well, originally it was going to be 400, didn't it?
It was going to be 400, but you know the locals, they did put up so much of a pressure that they did get moved. But where to? You know, we know now they went to Swansea, Cardiff and Wrexham. So it was very NIMBY sort of attitude where, okay, you know, they should be here, but just not here. Not here.
Yep, that's always the thing. As soon as it's in your back garden, all of a sudden, well, it's different if it's here. Because these people, they implicitly recognise that if you import lots of foreigners into a particular area, then it will change the local culture. There will be problems that come with that. But at the same time, they don't want to be seen as racist. Oh, it'd be racist of me to say that we can't have them in the country, just not right here.
So to give you just a little bit, you've already said that Tenby is beautiful.
Yes.
Penally is just the next little village on. It's a walking, it's 15 minutes
walk. I've probably passed through that.
It's 50 minutes walk into Tenby, and within 4 weeks, you had Stand Up To Racism drawing the sign saying, we want a house.
I'm sure the Socialist Workers' Party were there all of their pre-made signs.
So these pre-made signs came out. Dan questioned one and said, I've been in prison. I don't want to be in a prison.
Yeah. This is the illegal immigrants now. We've just
this is the sort of person that you want in the country, yeah.
We're fleeing dungeons and prisons. As we said, fleeing dungeons and prisons, and we just want to be left alone.
We also want to be left alone.
and not infested
with foreign criminals.
But I think, you know, a part of this as well was to look into the companies very briefly, because I know obviously time limited and there's lots to fly through, but you can see why these companies are doing it with the funding that they get. So the first picture that we got here, this is SBHL, so Stay Belvedere Hotels Limited. I've marked it there 2020 for a reason, because you can see from 2017, they turn over 510,000. 2020, 548,000. Not even 2 years later, it goes up to 104.8 million.
So these were basically a nothing company until this deal came about for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can absolutely see why they would take this. But for me personally, if I was this company, there would be no amount of money in the world that you could give me to sell out my own country.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there's another little funny caveat as well, because what they do is they take hotels which are predominantly used or owned by French companies. So, you know, it's as if the French businesses are like, right, well, we've got to get them out. So let's put them in the UK versions of our hotels.
Yep.
And then we'll take the funding from these. So it's just a big circle of money, because this money, remember, is our money. This is government funded property sort of listings for SBHL. But then on the next one, which is Clear Springs, which is another sister partner of SBHL, you can see again 13 million, so a little bit more, up to 68.7 million in 2020. And then straight up to 501.8 million within 2 years. Now that jump is, I suppose, it's any businessman's dream, isn't it? That jump.
And this is just in Wales. These are just operating in Wales.
Yeah. So this isn't England at all. And then Clear Springs have got another company called Clear Springs Management Limited, similar sort of numbers, 38 million, 7.25 million, up to 506. So you can see all of them have gone up to a ridiculous turnover. Just in the last 2 years. So you can see why they're doing it and where the money is going. And that goes to show, if they're having to spend that much money or turn over that much money, that's how much money's coming in. How much money's going out onto the hotels? How much money's going out daily? So they must be... We can't get the figures. You touched on it earlier on. We've tried so hard to get the figures of how many people are in Wales illegally, but they kind of bracketed it all off. So in COVID, they said that everybody came under this program called Everybody In. That included all the homeless people as well. So all the homeless people in Wales and all the illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
They don't store the figures. They don't know the figures.
They make it as purposefully difficult as possible for anybody to find this out. Because if the true figures did come out, I covered this on the podcast the other day when I was talking with Nick Buckley and was speaking about the fact that in England alone, there is probably tens of millions more people than have ever been picked up on the census.
Yeah.
Just when you look into information like the amount of sewage outflow that's going out, the amount of food that gets bought on a daily basis, it probably shows that there's probably more like 100 million people in England alone. So in Wales, and the reason they would hide that is because if the people did know, people would be furious.
Yeah.
Because this is all, like you said, this is all taxpayer money. I was furious enough when I found out that Swindon Borough Council is using some of my tax money to fund a migrant charity that operates locally here. They gave them £50,000 over the last tax year, which is almost as much as they were spending on maintaining local beautiful areas. And it's ridiculous because nobody voted for this. Nobody asked for this. This supposedly we live in a democracy, but this certainly isn't anything that I think anybody would vote for. I mean, even the NIMBYs that you pointed out, if you said, okay, hundreds of millions of pounds of your tax money will be going to this every year. They would, they might even, you know, think twice about
it. So you've touched on something. So this is what happens in Swansea Council. I won't name the spurious charity that they set up. Mm-hmm. So you get a group of migrants from a specific area. Then you get a couple of them to put their names down to become a charity or a volunteer association. And then you write up a bid, and you suddenly get a gloriously painted minibus for that organisation.
Yep.
And also offices and also everything else that goes
all
with it.
All pre-packaged for
all
them.
All pre-packaged on spurious things. Yeah. And this is what happened with Picton, although that's going off subject. But this is what's happening all over the country. I was remonstrating with Stand Up to Racism in Swansea a week ago, and I said that there are probably 7 million I'd like to send home. And they jumped on that because I'd said 7 million, but they don't know where I got it, where that figure comes from, because of course the Home Office say, oh, there's only 1.2 million overstayers or whatever they call them.
Yeah, of course there
are. Not if you look at the effluent, the sewage that goes out of the country, not if you look at everything else and you think, well, for this size of population, we expect this size of effluent or this size, whatever it is.
Yet we're getting magnitudes higher than that.
Correct. And that's why I said 7 million. The Home Office can't clear it up. The Home Office won't clear it up. I'm sticking with 7
then,
million.
Or isn't it that the councils go to rely on? So if they do need to do one of them polls, like these, you know, the racist countrysides, it'd be that group. So you're on about the Somalian woman's aid, don't you?
Yeah.
So I'll name them. So they'll go to that group then and say, we'd like your opinion on this. What do you think? And then that group will come back and say, oh, yes, hideous, it's racist and everything. Then the council will go, well, we've had this expert opinion that this is racist, so we've got to change everything.
The expert opinion being the people who are representing the communities that other people might want gone. It's very biased and it's clearly set up just to basically screw over the local population.
Yeah, it's complete gerrymandering because, remember, it's a nation of sanctuary. 16-year-olds can vote in Wales. My daughter, who's 14, had a letter through the door. Don't forget to register to vote. You know, she's 14. She's still in school. She hasn't done her GCSEs yet. And she's being told to vote. Absolute madness. But also the foreign nationals can vote as well. So, you know...
All of this does sound like the kind of policies that only a child would vote for. But even then, you're not actually voting for these policies, are you, anyway?
But we actually put that to them, and they came back with, and this is the office of Mark Drakeford, you elected us to make these decisions. And it's like, well, no, we didn't. We elected you to make the decisions you pledged on your manifesto. And we didn't even elect you anyway. You know, Wales, the majority of Wales didn't even vote. Just to bring it back to the point there, the councils and the Wales Online, or Tales Online as we call them, they said that there was only three or four, I think it was four, hotels in Wales.
If you could go to the next image, please, John, so we can get that off on screen. Is this what we're talking
this
about?
This is it, yeah. Yep. So this is just from our website. We've got our own section, Migrant Hotels. And as you can see here, there's more than 13, but 13 of these are in Wales alone. So even the media are going out and underplaying. You know, I know nobody watching this is going to be surprised with that at all. But they're going out and underplaying how many hotels are actually being used when we've got 13 of them here that we did, you know, some of them we did in one day.
Yeah, I mean, when we first broke this, the Dragon Hotel in Swansea, we actually asked the manager, we said to the manager, is it true the Home Office are taking over the hotel? Yes. Yeah. Is it true that, and of course he came up with that.
What's the name of the company? And he said SBHL.
Yep. Yeah. He came up with all this. Swansea Council went into overdrive to say he was lying.
I mean, he's the manager of the hotel. He would probably know better.
Yeah.
Well, he's the one who deals with the day-to-day.
Yeah. Swansea Council, we actually did a favour for Swansea Council on that one, I think, because we stopped it happening because they sacked the staff. They made them sign NDAs. It was a couple of weeks before Christmas. So as you can imagine, a lot of people were annoyed. a lot of people come to us and give us information. So we went and followed it up. Swansea Council got hold of that, and then that led them to challenge the Home Office to get it postponed and stopped. So it was then marketed that it was closed for refurbishment all over the busiest period of the year, Christmas holidays. All the parties were cancelled, including the councils. We went in there then when it reopened, and we just walked around the whole hotel, didn't we? No refurbishment, no nothing. So yeah. It was just all one big lie, and it's an open lie to the public. And this is why we get so much flack in Wales, because obviously what goes out to the public is completely contradictory to what we are saying. Yeah. And this is from
you've
the people
been on the ground, seen it with your own eyes, filmed it in yeah. many cases.
Yeah. But we're wrong.
Yeah, but obviously you're lying. You yeah. manufactured yeah. the documents. You faked all of the video footage.
Correct.
You're just lying. Yeah. That's just what yeah. happens. Yeah. These Voice of Wales, they're evil.
that is the narrative. Yeah. But the point of this was that even though, okay, Wales does do it differently, they're settling them in houses before even processing them, which means they're going to be staying there anyway. But my problem with it is, like I said, three of them were within 5 minutes walk of my house. And these headlines that we're going to flick through
in
now,
the next one, please, John.
I won't go through the articles because there's a lot of them, but just to show you the caliber of people that are in Wales coming in through these schemes and are living next door to you. You know, they've got neighbours. Their neighbours could be children. They're in HMO, so home of multi-occupancy. So you could have five or six people in one house, which can lead to big problems. But this is the caliber of people. So this is recent. This was literally the other day, just behind the council buildings. Asylum seeker threatens to burn himself alive in Swansea bedsit. He wasn't happy because of the way the Home Office have been handling his application. I'm guessing he's not getting enough money.
Well, this is a lot like there was that story that Carl and I covered a few weeks ago where a migrant who was upset that he wasn't getting enough money, upset that he wasn't getting deported soon enough, just decided to go out and stab an 18-year-old. Yeah. You probably saw the same story.
Yeah.
And even then, he was still being put into the courts and put through all the systems before, okay, no, hang him. Was Carl's answer.
You
could also just deport him in the first place. If he's so desperate to be deported, you deport them. If they want to be out of the country, let them out of the country.
Exactly that. We at Penally, which was a Ministry of Defence base at the time, they committed arson in there. Now, if you or I did that, it's a mandatory custodial sentence. With those two, they actually gave them a community restorative order. Don't do it again, you naughty boy.
And say sorry,
which they did, and then they were moved. So they weren't even deported. So you've got an arsonist, been in the country a couple of weeks.
They were moved so they can go cause more trouble in a different part of the country. It's complete anarcho-tyranny, I swear.
The next headline then, so there's two on this guy, just because of the way BBC framed this one. Swansea man jailed after CCTV operator.
Is this the average face of a Swansea man?
Yeah, and the name is a typical Welsh name, Turkey Al Turkey. You know, so... We've got funny names in Wales, but this one, you know, it's the cream of the crop.
I feel like if I went to France and there's a typical French name, England Oh England. Yeah.
But this guy, Cumlevel Road in Brynhyfryd. So Cumlevel Road in Brynhyfryd is right next to a park. It's the biggest park in Swansea, that Brynhyfryd Manston sort of area. Cumlevel Park. All the kids go there after school, and this is where he lived. The next article, I put it just because the headline does it a bit more justice, from Wales Online. Man carried comatose woman onto grass in Swansea City Centre and raped her whilst shot CCTV or security guards watched on CCTV. So again, you know, nice guy. Obviously,
someone you'd want to meet your sister.
To our country. Yeah, absolutely. Next one, man threatens to blow up his boss after a row about work documents. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't be allowed to be working. You know, if you're a refugee, you don't get work documents. You don't get a boss. You know,
and I can understand the sentiment that he's going with here, but he shouldn't be able to make it in the first place.
No, absolutely. But it, further down in the article, what it says is how he attacked his housemate. So, you know, separate to the headline, he attacked his housemate with a kitchen knife, leaving him with scars on his face. So this is the problem again with the houses of multiple occupancy is, they do bring their problems over here. We've seen it. We've seen it in Penally. Yeah. We've seen it in Napier.
Yeah.
We saw it in Leicester when the Hindus and the Muslims decided to start breaking out fighting in the street.
Yeah, over cricket, which is quite funny, wasn't it? But then, you had the radicals then going out, like that Mohammed Hijab, going out, Muslim patrol out on the streets, you know, actually goading more problems. The next one again. So all these again, like I said, are 5 minutes with it from my house. All these people are living. Stranger broke into house and snatched a toddler from mother's arms before asking for a kiss. So just to add context there, the guy, obviously his name here, Hassan Mia, lovely Welsh name. This person, they didn't know him, never recognized him or, you know, never seen him before, walked into their house, tried to steal their child. He then was found laying naked on the floor of a pizza takeaway, pouring a bag of sugar over himself. So that's where he was arrested.
Was the baby at least all right?
Yes. So the mother and the grandmother managed to get the toddler back. So they did wrestle the baby off them. But the fact that this guy could just walk into a house, pick up a child.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that I would say your average, normal, sane British person wouldn't even consider that. Wouldn't even consider walking into someone else's house.
Where I grew up, my parents didn't have to lock the door.
Correct.
Yes.
And that should be, as far as I'm concerned, that's how it should be across all of England, all of Wales, all of Scotland. Yep. We should live in the sorts of communities where you're able to leave your door unlocked and not have to worry that anybody you know is going to break in. But when you get people like this coming into your community and they can just walk in and try and steal your toddler for some reason, who knows what for, then this is what leads to people leaving these places. In America, you always got all the talk about a white flight this, white flight that, gentrification, etc. The problem is that, generally speaking, when these kinds of people come into your community, you don't want to live in that community anymore. Right. And it's even more of a tragedy if you and your family have lived there for generations.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Do you not think that this would be solved quicker if all the migrants were placed around Suella Braverman's house and Rishi Sunak's
little Ricky.
House. Yeah, perhaps Ricky.
That's his MC name.
Yeah.
Ricky Waff Sunak, you know. It would be sorted.
Well, certainly if you did get the get them into the backyards of the NIMBY types, perhaps then the people would change their mind. But it's the same whenever you see clips of people going for the refugee rallies and you get the one person who decides to have a little bit of fun, goes around with the camera and goes, pretends to be signing people. Oh, you want refugees? Oh, how many can you take in your house then?
Yeah.
Every single one of these inevitably middle-class toff twats just turns around and goes, well, I don't have room in my house. I'd love to, but I'm in a bed sit, so I can't. I'd love to, but my spare room's full at the moment. You know, all of the excuses in the world to make it so that somebody else has to deal with it.
Except for St. Lineker.
Oh, except for St. Lineker.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Thank God.
He took one in, a heavily vetted one, yeah. So the next one, this guy isn't a refugee, but this is a mosque, a popular mosque in Cardiff that this imam preaches at.
He's a Swansea
mosque, was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Right, okay. So either Swansea or Cardiff, but imam raped a child in a mosque, Swansea Crown Court told. He was actually let off because he's senile now, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's got a bit of dementia, although there has been reports and video evidence following it that he's perfectly sane mind. He knows exactly what he's doing and where he's going.
We've actually got a bit of footage where after he's pleaded being in, you know, he can't remember, he's got Alzheimer's, whatever he's got, he walks up to us, a car, leans in and you know, shakes hands with everybody. He seems to know.
Perfectly
he
lucid.
Seems to know people in the
community.
In the community, and then we see him again meeting a group of people, and he knows them.
See, it's interesting, the types who are very anti-Christian, anti-Western religion, whenever they talk about how evil religion is, they always bring up the Catholic Church. Mm. Oh, imagine all the altar boys and such. They would never bring up anything like this,
no,
would they?
No. Well, the next one is another good one. This is another recent one. So Cardiff not guilty verdict urged due to insanity. So what basically happened? Your mother accused of killing her son through religious fasting. So obviously it's really important that you fast, you know, to the point that, you know, you allow your son to die. That's just another one that's popped up, and that's another problem. Obviously, you wouldn't get this one being called on religious grounds. And actually, a different article that I found actually specifically says there's no need to question any religious problems here. It's nothing to do with religion, you know, nothing to do with religion. They were fasting because of religion, but it's nothing to do with religion, you know, nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Sort of angle.
Yeah.
The next one, this is again Swansea, a massive park in Swansea, close to the student village. A cocaine dealer caught operating openly in Poplar Park. So he was just walking around this massive, Vicky Park it's called, huge park, duck pond, big, you know, lots of children go there as well. Just walking around offering people drugs.
As you do.
Yeah.
As you do. Was this lad Albanian?
I don't think he was Albanian. Ednad Abar was part of a gang peddling Class A drugs. But what he was basically saying is that because of how difficult life has been, he had to turn to drug dealing.
Yeah.
I've heard that one before.
And this comes on the back of the former South Wales Police Chief Constable saying that he wants to legalise Class A's and have shooting galleries. Now, he's now been promoted.
Shooting galleries in what sense?
Not as in firing squads, which is what I would like, but shooting galleries as in shooting up...
Heroin.
Oh.
And having a nurse on scene to make sure that you're comfortable.
It's very interesting that you hear that, because Carl covered it ages ago. The Taliban, who are Muslim themselves, have a much stricter policy when it comes to Class A's and drug addicts, which is, we will put you in this hut away from drugs, we will keep an eye on you, and you will go cold turkey.
Yeah.
No matter what, we will force you to go cold turkey. So that's a very interesting difference in cultural approaches there, isn't it?
Very much so.
We'll fly through these next ones because they are in a conscious of time. But man made thousands illegally helping asylum seekers into the UK. So, you know, another Welsh name, Mehdi Mahmood Esfahanji or whatever. So,
sounds like a VD disease, that's
right. He does.
He's basically doing what Clear Springs were doing, but illegally, you know. So,
he's ready to get a contract from the Welsh government.
Probably.
Yeah, absolutely. Next one then, asylum seeker who raped student in Cardiff night out jailed. So, you know, again, just goes to show these asylum seekers, it's not unusual that for some reason they like to go around touching young women, especially in Cardiff. We did a report in Cardiff around that time, actually, and it was the same. They were the young students, the female students were being followed. They were being assaulted. The houses were being broken into. And it was always it was funny because they're all students, so they're quite wokey sort of people. They didn't want to say, oh, yeah, they were, you know, slightly tanned. You know, they were slightly tanned. You know,
horrifying that they've been gaslit into thinking that if you just admit the truth and recognize reality that's in front of you, that's somehow wrong, evil, racist, all of these buzzwords.
Yeah, absolutely. The next one, young refugees exploited by crime gang in Birmingham, told to deliver cocaine to Wales. Again, that's the go-to line, isn't it? So if they're caught in these farms or dealing drugs, it's because they've been people trafficked and they've been exploited. So then they just get, you know, well, don't do it again. Come over here. We'll give you house stay up trouble. Next one then, Albanian who paid $22,000 to enter the UK was a gardener for a drugs factory in a house in a Welsh village. So again, come over to grow cannabis by the looks of it.
Who says there's no ethnics in the countryside?
There you go.
Well, that's very true.
They're just not registered to be here, are they? Yeah.
Seems like they're good
they're
gardeners.
They're just not going for a walk.
The next one then, failed asylum seeker became drug dealer because he's unable to work legitimately. Again, another one, well, you know, how legitimately could you work in France? You know, probably not as much then. But unfortunately, you come to Wales, you're granted sanctuary and you're able to do and please as you want. I suppose the next one then is just Mark Drakeford's solution to it all, because obviously it's such a massive problem. And I know this is something that has been brought up on this show and many others. But it is, you know, following on from that list of what we see come in, what he wants to do is give £1,600 per month benefits to fight, as a sort of social living wage, isn't it?
Yeah. Is this per?
So this person.
Is UBI.
Yeah.
Yes. Similar to what they're doing in Scotland, where they're going to be introducing the minimum income guarantee as well. Yeah.
But look at that headline, and public money to fight deportation.
And the benefits is public money in the first place.
And remember as well, so this £1,600 per month, that's tax-free. So they don't pay taxes on that. So that's more monthly than your average, especially because what they're saying
that's
is
that's more than minimum wage. That's a lot more than minimum wage.
Yeah. Well, including then they're getting their accommodation paid as well. It's going to be higher than the average wage in Wales. And this is apparently going to be aimed for, they're doing it for children coming out to care. That's how they market it. But what he means is they want to make sure these people stay because Labour are, you know, they've got a bit of a free run at the moment in Wales. 33% of 46% voted Labour. 50% didn't even vote in Wales. So he's got full reign from getting the majority of the minority voting for him.
Yeah.
So, or the minority of the majority. Sorry.
And his hope is that people will just stay suppressed. Because when you knock on doors, they say, what's the point in voting? And he's happy when people think that.
Yeah.
The last time he wasn't happy was in Brexit, when how many percentage turned out? 57% in Wales. We absolutely beat them down. He then bans the word Brexit.
Yeah.
This is
banned the word Brexit. I don't remember this.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's banned in Wales. It's now gone.
Yeah, what was Fantastic. It called? The Leave vote. That's what they call it now. But then, obviously, Mark Drakeford, and this is just the next article then, Mark Drakeford slammed shameful Conservative attack. So, surprisingly, the Welsh Conservatives, Andrew R.T. Davis, did call this out and say...
They said something,
which is surprising, you know. And then, obviously, following that, Wales Online, they go with a headline and they run. You don't need to play the video or anything, but how he emotionally defends £1,600 a month. So... What they're doing here is showing Mark Drakeford getting a bit emotional, saying about how these people have fled the most terrible places on earth and we need France. To look after it. France, yeah.
He's exactly. chatting some bollocks.
Absolutely, absolutely. But Wales Online, the reason why I included this one is because of the title, because Tales Online, we do want to start a petition with Wales Online to start every article with Once Upon a Time, because they do genuinely... push a false narrative.
Absolutely.
90% of the time. They have to do the 10% just to say that, oh, see, we are in power, so we got examples.
And the irony is, see the comment box there?
Yes.
If it's on a particular thing that they do not want you to have a comment on, they turn it off.
Yeah. Yeah, of course they do. Same with YouTube comments for a lot of places.
Yeah. Absolutely. But that's, you know, pretty much it for that segment. So, you know, the answer is Wales is just bringing them in. Anything that the Conservatives are trying to do, Welsh Labour are trying to overturn. Keir Starmer said you should look to Wales as the model of how he would run the country. So it's kind of a little warning for anybody that is hating the Tories right now and considering voting Labour, is that sometimes it's better the devil you know.
Perhaps. I mean, I'm certainly not going to put out a kind word in favour of the Tories, but no. I'm not going to put a kind word out in favour of Labour either, especially after recently Keir Starmer has been putting himself forward as this sort of great white hope figure, where he came out and did an article on with the bloody Daily Mail talking about how, oh, we need to sort all this stuff with the illegal migrant boats out.
Yeah,
it's coming from you.
Coming from
you, Keir. I don't believe a word out of your lying mouth. Why was it that you didn't put charges against Savile again?
Sir
Keir Starmer.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, moving on to the last segment, and I'm conscious of time here, so I'll try and get through this relatively quickly. It's time to look at some anti-racist voodoo. Now, are you guys dedicated anti-racists? Do you eat your vitamins? Do you say your prayers in the morning to St. Floyd? Do you have his image above your bathroom mirror so that you can get out of the shower and you can say a little quick word to him?
Actually, it is in the bathroom.
You've got his image somewhere in there, don't you? I bet. But I just thought it was interesting because I thought there are all of these symbols and totems almost that are treated with this religious air of respect and as though they have energy imbued within them, evil and positive energy, and they have to have the appropriate, you know, worshipping for the positives, destruction of the negatives.
Yeah.
And I thought it really just reminds me of voodoo. Almost. It's this really strange attitude where we need to venerate these benign objects, which is certainly not something that I'm particularly familiar with. So,
we've got a councillor that loves doing that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought it would be interesting to go through some examples of that, talk about the actual backstories, shall we say, to some of these big race narratives that exploded out of America and led to organisations like BLM, who we've already discussed today. Because when you start to dig into these narratives, they really don't hold up.
No.
They really do not hold up. But before I go any further, we've got premium content on the website that we really want you to watch. This one's a recent one. Epochs, which is Bo's series, which he a lot of the time has Carl on, and they've been going through the Assyrian Empire. This is part 4. So if you really want a good deep dive into the Assyrian Empire, we've got hours worth of content on that right now. So you can please sign up for the website. £5 a month for just our basic membership that gives you access to all of the content that we've got on there, and we do put a lot of work into this and we really want you to watch it. So please consider signing up for a membership. Anyway, so the first thing that really got me thinking about this was this absolutely ridiculous news story that I found where everybody remembers Derek Chauvin, the big boogeyman, Derek Chauvin, the most evil man to have ever lived who didn't have a funny mustache. he was, of course, the person who was involved in the George Floyd incident, he went down for the murder of George Floyd. I think it was triple counts of murder, yeah. or third degree murder or something like that. And I don't know how much of the story that you guys are aware of. I'm sure that you've probably looked into it and know what actually happened. But if you go back and watch the content that we were putting out on YouTube at the time, Callum was watching all of the trial as it was going down and basically found that this media narrative around it was obvious nonsense. Mm. And what actually happened was Chauvin hadn't just, you know, knelt down and choked this guy out for no particular reason. Not that you can choke somebody from the back of the neck anyway. The very fact that people bought that in the first place is just a damning indictment of the school system. but what actually happened, of course, was that St. George had taken a lot, quite a bit of fentanyl, which was laced with methamphetamine, overdosed, and the involvement of the police and also the large crowd that gathered around, meaning that the ambulance couldn't get to them and had to park a block or two over, meant that he just died there and then. So that was interesting. But despite that truth, obviously, we all know that what actually happened in reality was that Derek Chauvin is the most evil man who ever lived. And as such, all of his possessions that he had as a police officer when it went down have been cursed forevermore, including the badge number that he had, which meant that no future officer will wear Derek Chauvin's badge number ever again. And they say here in the Minneapolis police chief Brian O'Hara says former officer Derek Chauvin's badge number will never be used again. He made the comments after the on Thursday after the city council settled two civil cases against Chauvin for $9 million. So it seems that what's happened is after he was put in prison, they have then opened up Pandora's box for any minor infraction or any side eye that he gave somebody in the past. They're now throwing lawsuits at the police department. The police department's paying up millions each time because Derek Chauvin, nothing. He could tie his shoelaces in the morning. He would do it in a bad and evil manner. Yeah. Everything that he's ever done has always been negative. And they even say here, the Minneapolis police have a tradition to recycle the badge numbers that are no longer assigned to a police officer, current officer. This badge, betrayed and so egregiously dishonored, we need to get the religious language in there, the dishonorable language, will be destroyed. So they're not just getting rid of the number, they're taking his badge and ritualistically destroying it.
Are they going to have a ceremony as well? Is there? Yeah. Are they going to have like a fire pit and dance around
melt
it?
Yeah, I was imagining they'll be dancing around, they'll have robes on, there'll be chants. You know, this is, it seems very, once again, a little bit of voodoo to me. And he said the Minneapolis mayor, said Jacob Frey, said the fact that no other officer will wear the badge is a symbol but an important one. Yes, we know. We can tell all of this is symbolic nonsense to make sure that everybody knows you do not mess with this narrative.
Yeah.
You can't say a word against this narrative. We even burnt his effigy at the stake. We're going to Guy Fawkes this guy every year from now on so that you know he's the bad guy.
Although, strangely enough, I think in this country, if you are slayed in the act of your, you know, the performance of your duty, the badge is never used again anyway. In this country, we treat it as a hero.
I mean, that would be...
So he's a hero.
Well, he's a hero, but we don't destroy them either. So
no, we don't destroy
that's
them.
That's the problem. And you know that anti-racism is the new civic religion of the US because you get things like the George Floyd sculpture in New York City when it... If you go to the next one, John, just so we can remind us of the beautiful visage. Yeah. It didn't even happen in New York City.
No.
New York, it happened miles away in Minneapolis. New York just felt the need to let everybody know that we also pray at the altar of St. Floyd.
Yeah.
And then I saw this on Twitter, which is very, very interesting. A tweet that I thought, honestly, at first was a parody. I thought it was a joke. Everybody, do you remember the name Trayvon Martin? Yeah, have you heard of the story? Yeah. Murdered by George Zimmerman in cold blood, and he was acquitted and he got off for no reason. And this Trayvon Martin, being another symbol of the institutional racism of the US, his flight suit that I'd never heard of before. Apparently, he did a flight. He did some kind of opportunity years and years and years ago where he had a flight suit given to him. Is now on display at the Smithsonian's Natural Museum of African American History. Can you believe that?
It's just rewriting everything, and you know the George Floyd stuff. I don't know why people aren't questioning, you know, all you need to do is look at that man's rap sheet and ask yourself, is the world a better place? You know, and I would say it is.
Yeah,
it is. Know, because what that guy had done, you know, George Floyd, is, you should not be on the streets.
I heard that he'd been turning himself around. I heard that he'd been turning his life around, which is why he was going around high as a kite.
Yeah, yeah,
in the middle of a 7-Eleven in the middle of the day,
yeah,
handing in counterfeit notes.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing is to say that he deserved to die or anything.
No, no, no.
But
no.
Just saying that it wasn't Chauvin's fault that he died in the first place.
No, absolutely not. But it's been allowed to be painted in that way. Like, where, yeah, like, how many Americans know his badge number? You know, how many would know that if it was, we just put a random number and just say we're taking that out? Who would know? You know, who cares about this sort of thing? I bet most Americans, they couldn't give a stuff if someone uses his badge number.
Actually, I'll bet that's a nice little earner if you started doing a replica of his badge.
Oh, yeah. but I thought this was a joke at first, this Trayvon Martin thing, but it's not.
No.
It's actually not. If you go to the next article, from the Smithsonian's Museum itself, it's got objects from Outcast, Octavia Butler, and Marvel's Black Panther on display in the National Museum of African American History and Culture's new Afrofuturism exhibition. This is Afrofuturism, a history of black futures. It seems more like a history of wish fulfillment, as far as I'm concerned, because you are literally putting up fictional things like the Black Panther costume worn by Chadwick Boseman. Now, they do have some things that I'm actually all right with being displayed in a museum. For instance, Vernon Reed's guitar, if you've ever listened to Living Colour, great band. You know, I'm fine with that. George Clinton's wig from Parliament Funkadelic. I love Parliament Funkadelic. I'm fine with these things being displayed in a museum. But then Trayvon Martin's flight suit from Experience Aviation. It sounds as though he might have taken an experience day at a space place, and they've just decided this is now an integral part of American cultural history.
Yeah, but isn't this a symbol across the whole world? They're trying to dig up things that actually didn't happen and attribute them.
Mm.
We had the Royal Mint the other year, Black History, and half of it was a load of cobblers.
Of course it is. They try and find... You've got court historians, BBC types, like David Olusoga, who wrote that book Black and British, which if you actually read through much of it, it's going to be talking primarily, and like most of that book is going to be talking about, did you know that we had race riots in Liverpool in 1919? All from that point. Anything before then is going to be like, a diplomat from a North African country visited the country for a weekend, one time in the Tudor era, and then immediately went home. Or you end up with things like there's that tapestry where, I think it's a tapestry or painting, where one of the bannermen playing a horn is black.
Yeah.
And it was such an unusual thing that we're still pointing to it now as evidence that there was apparently a multiracial, multi-ethnic culture in here. No, that's the reason we could only point to things like that and one or two other instances in the past 1,000 years before Windrush.
Yes.
It's because this just isn't a part of UK British history. And in America, obviously they have their own history with slavery, Jim Crow laws and other such things. But that's not the entirety of American history. But this is all an attempt to reframe all of American history from this very particular perspective as a way of, once again, humiliating people in the here and now for crimes that their ancestors from decades, if not hundreds of years ago, may or may not have committed in the first place. And there was more on this. They've had displays related to Trayvon Martin before. Trayvon Martin to Emmett Till. And this is where I wanted to get into a little of the backstory, because they give the story of Trayvon Martin here, what I would call the court story of Trayvon Martin, where they mention, on February 26th in 2012, in Sanford, Florida, Martin was returning to his father's house after a trip to the store, famously from buying some Skittles, when he was confronted by a member of the neighborhood watch, George Zimmerman. During the altercation, the unarmed 17-year-old high school student was shot and killed. Charged with second-degree murder, the neighborhood watch volunteer claimed self-defense, and on July 13th, 2013, a jury found him not guilty. The decision sparked protests decrying the results, and that was the big start of Black Lives Matter. That's where you got people like Patrice Cullors coming out of the primordial ooze and deciding that I'm now a cultural figurehead, I'm going to be the leader of a movement. That's where you get all of these organizations popping out from. And when put like that, it seems almost reasonable. Well, he was just coming back from the store from buying some Skittles, and he was just murdered for no particular reason. Obviously, this must be an injustice that needs to be righted, but that's not true.
Yeah.
Parts of the story are true, but then the second you start to look into it, it all falls apart. And this was enough, apparently, to justify displaying the clothing and other items in possession of Trayvon Martin when he was fatally shot. Sorry, if I was fatally shot, I don't want you stripping my body of the clothes and then putting them up in a museum. I think, what did I do? Yeah. What have I done that's wrong, guys? I mean, that's the sort of thing that you lead to.
What
either
happened to the Skittles?
Maybe they're still in there. They're still in date. Yeah. I'm a bit peckish right now. I mean, that's the sort of thing you either leave to great heroes, war heroes, or great villains. Yeah. That's not the sort of thing you just do for some kid who managed to get himself shot. And once again, this isn't the actual story. If you're watching this and you've only ever heard the court story, I had only really heard the court story, but I knew, let's be honest, we all know whenever we hear one of these narratives these days that there's going to be a lot more to it than whatever the mainstream media is reporting. But I saw this in the quote tweets from a man called Indian Bronson saying Trayvon Martin deserved it. Clear-cut self-defense. He was a violent criminal. And I thought, oh, seems a bit harsh. Okay, what's going on here? Best look into it. And then if we go to the next one. He linked a few articles in this, and I thought I would take a look at what some of the articles say. So the first one that he linked was this next one from the time in 2012 where NBC had to let out an apology that they edited the Trayvon Martin tape to make George Zimmerman sound racist, George Zimmerman being the man who killed him, where the original transcript of the audio they played was Zimmerman saying, this guy looks like he's up to no good, he looks black because he called up the police because he was a neighborhood watch, and they reported, oh, he just looks black, therefore he's up to no good. What he actually said was, this guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining and he's just walking around looking about. The dispatcher says, okay, and this guy, is he black, white, or Hispanic? Zimmerman says, he looks black. So they obviously cut out a lot of context as the media
important
loves to
context.
Do.
Yeah.
And then in the next article, which was also shared by this person, they say here that ABC News broadcast the story reporting the police surveillance video showed no evidence that Zimmerman suffered abrasions or bled during the confrontation with Trayvon, which, of course, if you were going by the court judgment, by the jury judgment, would mean that his self-defense story was nonsense. Oh, he had no abrasions on him. He wasn't hurt. Nothing went on. Except shortly thereafter, it clarified the situation, reporting that an enhanced version of the video showed Zimmerman with an injury to the back of his head. And I found this other one from an ABC report in 2012 saying that this is a different one. Sorry, I didn't include this link, John, so I'll just read this out. A medical report compiled by the family physician of Trayvon Martin shooter George Zimmerman and obtained exclusively by ABC News found that Zimmerman was diagnosed with a closed fracture on his nose, a pair of black eyes, two lacerations to the back of his head, and a minor back injury the day after he fatally shot Martin during an alleged altercation. So what it seems to me has happened is, rightly or wrongly, he confronted Trayvon Martin because his neighborhood watch maybe took it into himself to figure out what's going on. Why are you around our neighborhood? You're messing up the place. You look like you're on drugs or something. Martin decided to just attack him. Obviously, this is just going off the information that I can see here.
Yeah.
And then eventually had to shoot him in self-defense because apparently in the court hearing as what was going on, George Zimmerman stated that what happened was he was having his head smashed against the pavement. So he had to pull the gun and shoot him in the chest to get him off him. As self-defense, he ends up dying. Media reports it, oh, he just shot him because he was black. He was just black. He was shot by some guy who just hated him because he was just there black. And now this justifies showing the clothes that he was wearing when he was shot in the Smithsonian Museum so that everybody in the country can know this is what your country is. This is what your country was founded on. These clothes hold an aura. They hold a magic to them, which you need to absorb into your very bones.
It's absolutely crazy, isn't it? Because, like you said, it is the rewriting of history. Like 100 years time, what are they going to say about that suit? Are they going to say that this, young potential pilot, was taken from so young because of his cover back in the race roles of 2012.
We'd have colonized Pluto by now if it hadn't been for that damn Zimmerman.
Exactly, but it is the reframing of facts, and that's the what's concerning because it goes on in schools. When BLM came out, no teachers were rushing to the defense or rushing to tell the facts of the case, tell people who George Floyd actually was, what he did, what his record was, or give any context to it. All they point at is, look how racist America is, look how racist Britain is.
Yeah.
And that's the angle. Well, that's what
you're right, because our history is then immediately folded into their new history, and we're just the exact same as America always has been, despite the fact that we share a much longer and richer history than America has.
And we've had occasions where we've actually fought in defence of black people. Mm. There's a very famous case in when the Americans were over here, and the American white soldiers did not want to have drinks with the black soldiers in a pub in Devon. That's where they were massing for.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And the locals said, you're barred to the white ones unless you mix. Simple.
Well, just...
So we've got that, and it's called the British fairness. Mm. When we see something unfair, we usually deal with it. Now it's in reverse. We are now... it is a simmering pot, is Britain, because of the influx of migration into this country. It's too much, too quick, and it needs to stop. And it will spark, it will race over. And the problem is with Wales Online and other newspapers in this country, they're painting exactly the same thing as what you're pointing to now. Mm. It's a different narrative.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it happens in real time in front of our very eyes. Mm. And the most distressing thing for me is that people just go along with it.
Yeah.
Like one of the other articles that I pointed to before, the one that was talking about Trayvon Martin's, the first exhibition where they were displaying his clothes, mentioned Emmett Till. And everybody these days has heard the story of Emmett Till in the 1950s and 1954. It insults a white woman at a cashier and then ends up getting kidnapped and murdered by her husband and some other people. Horrible story. Obviously did not deserve what happened to him. No one would justify that. But... what happened was that nobody really cared or knew about that story beyond the local community that it happened in until about the early 2000s, when the story started to get picked up again so that it could be reframed as one of the inciting incidents of American racism.
Mm. Yep.
Despite the fact that it was coming right at the end of when the Jim Crow era laws were going to get repealed. The Jim Crow era laws were not repealed because everybody heard about Emmett Till and what happened to him, but they want to repaint it as, look at how white supremacist America is, look at how evil everything that white people in America do, and Emmett Till is now going to be the face of your shame. He will be the face of your guilt. Once again, this voodoo magic that you need to imbibe into yourself. Yeah. And the last one that I saw here, on the Smithsonian Museum, because I just decided to take a little bit of a look around, was they had a Breonna Taylor portrait featured in a new exhibition at the National Museum. Scroll down so we can see this, and this was back in 2021. So there's Breonna Taylor. Do you know the story of Breonna Taylor? Because there is the two stories. There's the media story and the one that was spread on social media and that I still see people spread on social media. Then there's what actually happened. So according to social media, not that you should ever believe much that you read on social media, you should always check out, vet any story you see on social media. What I always see is that police were going around hers to serve a no-knock warrant. They broke into her house at night when she was sleeping and shot her in her bed. Does this sound like a believable story to you?
No.
No, it doesn't. But people believe it anyway, because what actually happened was she was staying at her boyfriend's apartment. Her boyfriend, who was a drug dealer, they were supposed to serve a no-knock warrant. The police knocked instead, and her boyfriend woke up, got his gun, thought it was some rival drug dealers or something, started opening fire at the police. They returned fire. Breonna Taylor gets up and does what any intelligent person would do and walks towards the sound of gunfire. And then gets caught in the crossfire. Terrible thing that happened to her, but is not the same story that is being painted and pushed by those in control of media narratives. Mm. And it's absolutely ridiculous. And everybody loses at the end of the day when it comes to stories like this. Nobody comes out looking good. Nothing good happens when somebody is dead at the end of the story. But there is one person who makes an absolute killing, no pun intended, from all of these tragedies that do happen. And that is a man called Benjamin Crump. Who Connor made me aware of, who is the civil rights attorney who decides to show up every single one of these cases that comes up and always represents the family.
Offender.
Yeah, the offender or the family. So he represented, among others, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd's family, Trayvon Martin's family, Michael Brown's family, Tyre Nichols' family. Tyre Nichols was the guy who was killed by the, I think it was the Memphis, the five black Memphis police officers. earlier on this year where the media was really, they had a hard time reporting. the police officers were black who beat him up.
But it was white legacy, wasn't it? White.
Oh, yeah. It was. There were probably more black faces of white supremacy, just like Larry Elder in LA. You know how these things go. But it's absolutely ridiculous that all of these things happen. America is malformed and deformed so that everybody can know how evil it is. Whereas men like this probably make who knows how much money off of the back of all of it. So, yeah, there's my little story of anti-racist voodoo. Let's move on to the video comments if we've got any.
Hey, Lotus Eaters. I slapped together a quick graphic here on what I think about our propaganda theater of war. We have the three theaters, which is toward our own side. We have towards the middle, who is undecided or unaware, and towards the antagonistic, which is our enemy. Now, obviously, our enemy, we want to humanize ourselves to them or demoralize them so they don't show up to the fight. For the middle, we want people who are thought-provoking. And for our own side, we want to be edified, right? Now, what we don't want is a lot of rage bait or cheerleading. Towards the middle, we don't want to be misrepresented. So I put the Libertarian Party of Texas there. What is a rallying cry for our enemy is the people who do pranks, mockery. You know, the Proud Boys are a good example. We'd be better off without a lot of the people in the bottom of this chart. And that's just the reality of the propaganda war.
Fair play. I do agree that there are definitely people who are part of the right, and especially the online right, who are mainly just there to make money and grift off of things and not there to actually spread good or honest messages or change anything. Like, the work that you guys do is actual on the ground reporting, which you don't really see much of nowadays. No. So people like you, absolutely valuable, invaluable, I would say, whereas some others on that bottom half of the list, perhaps not. Although I will say I've not been looking into the Stephen Crowder thing.
That seems like
dirty laundry being publicly aired that I don't think anybody looks good coming out the back of. No. Although I have seen that clip, and I will just say that I, you know, do not like anything that I saw in that clip being spread of him shouting at his wife. Anyway, let's carry on.
In The Origins of English Individualism, Alan MacFarlane attempts to show that the societal values of England were, to the extent that records show, utterly unique and cannot be imposed. The English common law has never established that anyone must live a certain way, but that we chose to come together. Unlike Russia, India, China, and much of Europe, this is characteristic of the English colonies. To be American, Canadian, or Antipodean is to be part of something separate, and your cultures largely reflect those of the English dating back to at least the 13th century, and very likely long before that. I think Beau should give this work a proper book club.
That's right, we're the best. Confirmed. Interestingly enough, that book had been sitting in my Amazon basket for months. And then Alex starts posting videos talking about it. And I think that's a sign, isn't it?
So over the weekend,
I picked it up and I got it in the post over the weekend. So hopefully I get time to read that soon, because it sounds like it'd be really, really interesting.
It's a book, actually, that I don't know if you know this, but in Wales, they're now starting to take off books out of the shelves of libraries.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. So I'm now going in asking for those books.
Yeah, why not? To be fair, you probably find some gems doing that. If it's a naughty book you're not allowed to read anymore, chances are there's a lot of useful information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that looks like one of them.
Yeah. Let's go to the next video.
Dicleostemma capitatum, and I found a whole field of them, which is commonly called blue dicks, which, yeah, I know, blue dicks. It'll go with your blue balls. So the thing that I find really interesting about these is their sepals here, which is the kind of part behind the petals, is this just beautiful dark purple, as you can see. And they grow from a bulb.
Oh, was that the whole video? That was very nice. Thank you very much for that. Let's go on to some of the written comments. I'll go through some of these. California Refugee, who we just saw the video of there, says, "What a nice surprise. Glad to have the Voice of Wales back. I was thinking how little I see from Wales. There's more focus on England and Scotland, but I suppose that's my fault too. I should be actively following the Voice of Wales news." There yes, you should. They're excellent. Lord Nerevar always also says, "Good to see Voice of Wales back." And I'll go through a few on my comments, and then I'll go through yours as well. So on countryside colonization, and if we've got this up on screen, this is where you can follow Voice of Wales on Twitter as well, at VO Wales Official. And sorry, could you go to the next one? We've got Stan as well there. You always like to tag me in things on Twitter. It's one of my favorite notifications to see up. It's like, oh, there's Stan. He's tagged me in something. I wonder what's going on.
It's always humorous, I think.
Yeah. It's always a bit of good fun. But and here's the website as well. So please feel free to go on the website, support these guys. They do excellent work, and also they just really interesting. You do some really good stuff. Your segment was astounding. It was just how interested I was the whole way through. That was great stuff. For Countryside Colonization, Reruns of MacGyver says, so the leftists want the black and brown people to go back to the bush. That sounds a little racist. Baron von Warhawk says, it seems these hikers have taken the Longshanks mentality. The problem with the English countryside is that it's full of Englishmen. If this mindset is anything, the English have a lot to worry about when these colonists start acting like Longshanks.
Mm. Yes.
Good point. Damon Clevenger says, the urge to rip those Mecca signs off those trails must be extremely high. I would certainly find it tempting, although I would not condone any illegal action done by anyone.
We do a segment on our show called "Things That You Should Definitely Never Do," and I think that's one of the ones we'll have to include. I think.
Oh, I bet. And I'll read some of your comments quickly while we've still got a minute. So Ron Swansea says, "Great to see Stan and Dan speaking up for what's right. Wife and I are a few years off buying a house, but the rate that the migrants are pouring into the area didn't deplete the housing supply at a rate that's going to keep us renting for the foreseeable." Future. Yep. Will we see Dan and Stan at Cinema & Co. on Thursday covering the Katie Hopkins chaos that will no doubt ensue?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to be there Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday.
We're going to be there all week, lads. Anonymi says, I would say the illegal alien should be placed directly within the homes of everyone working in the civil service. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I'd love to see that. And then you guys can go around with cameras and get all the footage for us to a reality show. Omar Awad says, why do I get the feeling you were informed of what the government was doing with the illegals the same way that Arthur Dent was told his house was being demolished at the start of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? That notice must have been on display for months in a forgotten basement behind six doors and printed in size 2 font. Yeah. That's always the case. Always the case. Kevin Fox says, ah, Penally. Remember it well. Spent 2 weeks doing pan bashing there after coming off an emergency op banner tour when Bobby Sands and his mate started their own extreme Weight Watchers club. lovely beach, yes, but not so wonderful when you're being forced to run up and down it, waist deep in the sea 20 times. Kind of spoils the aesthetic value of the place. I'm sure you got over it. Hammurabi the Sixth says, so Jeremy Clarkson can't have a nice countryside restaurant because it'll destroy the aesthetic, but they can build apartments, hotels, and high-rises in those same locations for the sake of diversity. Honk, honk. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is very clown world. But that's all we've got time for. Is there anything you guys would like to say before we sign off?
Just thank you to all the followers, and we've got a loyal bunch. Great.
Lots coming pretty soon.
Yeah, lots
coming. Keep an eye out for us. That's something, actually, because on the... Tomorrow, the 2nd, 3rd and 4th, Katie Hopkins coming to Swansea and the Antifa mob are out in force. They are going to be shutting it down. On the 7th of May, there's a protest in Swansea, which is against a 15-minute city. So if everybody could attend, that would be fantastic because they are threatening to violently shut that one down. So, you know, the anti-fascists are going to come in and they're going to stop the protest going on. So there's going to be lots of good content coming up this week.
All right, well, please feel free to check that out and support these guys. Until then, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Take care and have a great rest of your day.